There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live back at the Elder Dragon Girl podcast. This is your host Igor, and back from the dead with me is my co-host Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi.
This was apt.
Yeah.
So we've been gone again.
Don't worry, it's probably just the plague.
Just the COVID.
Nah, just the plague. Because I was cleaning the basement from a flood.
Ah. So you got the black mold and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's healthy.
Since you asked me first how what's been doing, well, not much really. Been just like doing stuff.
Ooh. The infamous stuff.
Yeah, the infamous stuff. Just playing some video games. And going to jobs. I mean one job, one single job.
I was gonna say.
But yeah, pretty boring stuff. We'll talk more in depth a bit later. How was your time away?
Sucky. I'm the biggest reason why we haven't been recording in a while, because my job has been sucky.
Oh.
You know how you go to work and do one shift and that's it?
Yeah.
Well, I have to do 4 hours in one shift and then go back home and then do another 4 hour shift. Mostly.
Yeah, that does sound kind of sucky.
Yeah. Either that or afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, super sucky all the time, but I finally have a proper day off. So we can actually record this thing.
Cool.
Plus,
cool.
Not much has been happening in the world of magic lately, so...
Yeah, we just got some Double Masters reprints.
But that's the reprint set, so...
Yeah, and maybe it's... better we didn't cover that, because we would probably say the same thing like literally everyone said, that
it's the best product ever.
Sure, actually I don't recall anybody saying it's actually any good, so
nope,
we would follow that trend. I mean, I did get a bunch of stuff from Double Masters, and
yeah,
the existence of Double Masters is great and all, but the fact that if you're buying it, you either buy a box or you don't buy it is kind of, like, it's kind of sad, really.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to play the lottery or not?
I mean, buying just a single pack is like the super lottery.
Yeah, that's if you're feeling really ballsy.
And if you're buying a box, then it's all up to the toppers.
But if you're just buying singles, it's, you know,
oh, it's the best thing ever. I actually almost completed my foil Tron lands.
Sheesh.
Which is, like, amazing, because before this, if I wanted to, like, foil out my old deck, I would need just, like, 400 or 500 euros just on the lands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the Tron lands. And now it's, like, for, like, 20 euros or something like that, I just... like more like 30 euros, I get all of them foiled, and that's like amazing.
That's bitching.
Yeah, so the actual most expensive part of the deck will probably be foiled soon. So I'm actually thinking about foiling the rest of it, but we'll see. Foiled snow covered islands are really expensive.
I heard that, because they're getting played in every format possible.
And I prefer the old ones, and they're even more expensive, so like...
Cause lack of actual product.
Yeah. So, you know. Anyhow,
Have you been doing some commanding of the week?
Well, since I haven't played Commander or Magic in general... I mean, I did play some Magic during our breaks on work. We're actually I managed to persuade one more person to start playing Magic, and now I have to deal with Burn.
Haha.
With...
At least it's not prison decks and things like that.
Well, you see, when I had to deal with A-Track, it was just miserable to play against it. I was winning most of the time because, you know, Tron and A-Track, lol. But it still felt kind of miserable, even when I won. And when I lost, it was just like, fine, okay, let's go. Let's go do some work. But now it's like, I don't think I can win, like, ever. With Blue Tron, I actually can't win against Burn. And this isn't even the final, the optimal version of Burn. We, like, started with random stuff we found in his, among his pile of cards. And it, like, he started off with Raging Goblins, and, I mean...
Good enough.
We quickly said that we were proxying those for Monastery Swift Spears because, my god, it's so painful. Like, it pains me to see a Raging Goblin attack me because mm-hmm. it's so, like, horrible. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. I can't. I want a Swift Spear to attack me because a Raging Goblin is, like... Just no, it's too painful for me. And
it was never good.
Yeah.
Raging Goblin.
And but since we don't have all the other cards, we did manage to snipe some Goblin Guides for cheap.
Ooh.
Because, you know,
those are good.
They're a playset now is like a single one like a couple of years ago.
That's a much better goblin than a Raging one.
Yeah, I mean, the Raging Goblins are still proxies for Swift Spears, because they're a lot harder to find, because people actually play them.
Yep.
And the long-term plan is to actually become an Izzet Blitz deck.
mm-hmm.
But, you know, just to have burn cards to, you know, mix and match the deck every now and so. And I have to say that the deck, once it received those Raging, Goblin Guides, like, the deck power spiked immensely.
Yep, those are kind of good. Plus, if your friend, you know, decides to play more Burn, he can play Burn in basically almost every format.
Yeah.
With these cards.
Also, Keldon Marauders were surprisingly okay-ish.
Trees that ping something when they ETB and leave, right?
Yeah, with Vanishing too.
Yeah.
The main part is that he's playing for Light Up the Stages.
That's a card that, you know, I expected it to be good, but seeing it burn play everywhere is like, yeah.
It's actually a bit surprising to me that Burn doesn't play that card, because I think it's like, it's not efficient enough, and, you know, you can hit two Rift Bolts and then you're super sad.
Well,
because you can't suspend from exile, and we learned that when it actually happened. I completely forgot about that.
Yep. This is how it works.
But yeah, they've been really helpful, and they're gonna be really helpful when he starts playing Blitz.
Mm-hmm.
We also got him the Manamorphoses, which aren't like 15 euros a piece anymore.
Yep.
But 15 euros a playset, so that's really good.
Yeah, that card was stupidly expensive.
I mean, it still relatively is, kinda, but, you know, it's a lot more manageable.
Yeah.
So all he needs now is just a couple of Phoenixes. Actually, not Phoenixes, those Stormwing entities.
Mm-hmm.
And...
He's good to go.
The mana base. Dun dun dun.
The mountain?
Mountains and islands and a couple of, I guess, fast lands, check lands.
See, that's why he should just play a normal burn.
I mean, he is starting with the normal burn right now, so he's going to upgrade it into
Stay
Blitz.
There. Never spend a dime on your mana base. I mean, If you want to pick some fancier arts, I guess you spend a bit more money.
But then I made a mono G-tron, and the G stands for Golos.
Oh God.
So it's basically a mono Greentron, which actually managed to upgrade because, you know, Karn isn't $1 million anymore. So I grabbed two Karns.
So what's the Karn count now?
It's at 3.
Ooh.
Which I think it's enough. It's enough. I mean, I have to fit Golos in there.
I mean, you managed to have Tron working with one Eugene and Karn, if I remember correctly, so...
Yeah, and I have... two Eugenes, but I'm planning to stick to like zero Eugenes for this deck. I don't think I will be needing them. But the deck is not really that. It's actually, when I made it, it seemed really boring to play because it was so linear. But when I actually played against somebody else, it's actually seems kind of interesting. So. The basic is, it's basically a mono green Tron, but it's not super, super laser focused on the turn 3 Karn. Instead, it's more focused on getting the lands and playing Golos. And then playing whatever. So it's a bit on the beefier side. I have a bit more threats than normal Trons, like I have all the Eldrazi Titans. And by all, I mean, it was like four of them.
I'm surprised you went with a beefier version of a deck. I would never have guessed.
And the whole point is to get those cascading cataracts and just spin the wheel with Golos. And Golos, you know, he can actually fetch Tron pieces as well, so he gives a bit more consistency. That's why I ditched Sylvan's Scrying. And I don't need as much of those mana cyclers, those eggs.
Those stars and eggs.
Yeah, so I have just stars. And I'm using the Golos, some Thrag Tusks to stabilize early game. Of course, I'm using a bunch of Worm Coils, and I'm not using Karn the Great Creator because I'm still in the camp that... playing 4 Karn Liberated and 4 Karn... I almost said Silver Surfers. Great Creators. I just think that's... I don't think that's optimal. And... I think it's... you rather play just 4 of these, because it kind of dilutes the strategies of both. Like, I understand that you play Karns, so you don't have to play Oblivion Stones in your main, but then I checked the sideboard of those decks, and they don't have Oblivion Stones in their sideboard as well. I just don't like the idea of having all of them in the deck, so I would go either one or the other, and for Greentron, I would prefer just going with Karn Liberated, because he's so powerful. And I have enough green sources, like 6 forests, and with those, with the stars and, you know, Golos, I think I can do a switcheroo's style of sideboard where I put in the now classic for me walls.
Yep.
When people started hating on my numerous artifacts.
The old Nyxia special.
Yep. Just serving them with some. Wall of Roots and Overgrown Battlements. And their Blood Moons be like, yes, yes, I'm useful. I find purpose in life.
See, that's why we need to have Cursed Totem in Modern.
Can you not? I mean, you do, you have Linvala, but...
No, but the actual Cursed Totem.
No, stop it.
Why?
I mean, nobody's gonna sideboard Cursed Totem against me.
Except me. I will be your folly.
So yeah, I've yet to take the Greentron actually on some tournament. I did have a lot of success with Bluetron, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a fun deck. And, you know, just doing Tron things, waiting for them to unban, to actually print Tron in Pioneer or in Historic, since they're actually putting everything in Historic, so why not the Tron?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Honestly.
If they put Tron in Historic, I'll actually go play Arena. Like, why not? It has Tron in it. I have to play Tron.
You are kind of contractually obliged to play Tron.
Yeah. Or they're gonna put in Cloud Post and Glimmer Post, but not Vesuva, and then like, oh, okay. I guess I'm playing Arena then.
Or put just two of the three Tron lines in Historic.
Yeah, and then like, I guess I'm playing Arena then. But yeah, on the Commander front, I've just been like getting random small upgrades for the for decks, like some foils, some cards. Some people have bought a lot of cards from other people, and now they're actually on sale. So, you know, getting some random stuff like that. Got some new protectors though for Golos. Seem pretty sweet, but we'll some new Dragon Shield art brush.
I was gonna be mad at you when you said Ultra Pro.
No, art brush. So can't wait to see what's special about them. They're kind of like matte, but not as matte. They're like more fuzzy, I guess. They're different, and they smell weird.
But
they smell like they smell like a freshly made painting.
I like that.
Guess what they're called? Brush for that. They have an art as their background, so that was.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The important part. So yeah, how was your time?
Mostly doing some role playing things. I got a couple of upgrades for Lesha, and when I say couple, I mean just two cards. I got a Splinter Twin, which is never gonna get unbanned in Modern, so you know. Might as well buy it now. Before the spikes happen. I got an Aetherstone Canonist, but I might have mentioned that last time. And I got a Goblin Sharpshooter. Let's go with that combo to see how that works. Because twin combos with like the Village Bellringer as well. So that's good. And that's basically what I've done with Alesha. I'm kind of thinking of going to Alesha server and collaborate with a couple of guys to make the ultimate CDH Alesha guide. That's been on my mind for lately. So that's a project to do, because a bunch of people have been asking me, you know, how would you upgrade it for CDH optimally? So I might as well do the thing.
Yeah.
I will let you know how that goes.
And I've noticed you... You actually acquired a PC.
Yes. It's finally working. That's what we're recording on right now. I got a functional PC. I got a really cheap 27-inch screen, like super cheap, 400 kuna. That would be like less than 50 bucks.
Yeah.
Some guy really wanted to get rid of it because he was looking for a monitor that he can actually put on a wall. This one you can't.
Yeah,
so he was getting rid of it cheap.
Well, 27-inch, that's big.
Yes.
That's really big.
For super cheap price. He posted it, and I contacted him like 7 minutes after he posted it. So I was lucky in that regard.
So now that you can actually play games on your PC, anything that you particularly enjoyed during this time?
I've been playing Total War Warhammer 2. I'm a sucker for Total War games, and I'm a sucker for Warhammer games, so that's a good combo.
A natural fit.
Ironically enough, not playing Empire or something like that, I'm playing Greenskins.
Oh yeah, you gotta play with them with the boys.
With the boys, yeah. Finally been playing Warframe again, now that the new update is out, and it's fun.
I just finished the basic storyline part. And I can't believe they actually went with the snake joke.
Which one?
When you... So to avoid any spoilers, when you die at one point, when you acquire the thing, then if you die, then the guy goes, snake? Snake!
Oh, I didn't die. I wish I died now.
Oh my god, I was like, he just did that? And I was just like, I was just like standing there. Like, really?
What the hell happened?
Really? They did it just because of that. I'm pretty sure that that's the sole reason it's called Snake.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised. Because the people at DE are huge fucking nerds.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for more JoJo to show up in the...
Yeah, like a frame that has its stand.
Last year, right before the community manager at DE, was like, I'm not sure what the JoJo is, and at this point I'm too afraid to ask. And then one of the people I follow streaming, Pat from Super Best Friends, formerly, was like, so it's this, and then she started following it, and now she's making her own Dio cosplay and all that. So I'm just waiting for more JoJo in Warframe.
We do have a time rewind frame, but not a time stop frame yet.
I mean, Limbo is kind of that.
Limbo
was always considered to be the Dio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised you know so much about JoJo, even though you didn't watch it.
I mean, it's there's memes everywhere, so you know.
Yes.
Memes are the great teacher.
I've been telling one guy at work, how many things are JoJo reference?
The only proper answer is yes.
But yeah, I've been telling random stuff like gay people. It's a JoJo reference. City we're in Zagreb is a JoJo reference because in one scene there is a map of Europe and you see Zagreb, so we're a JoJo reference. Nazis are a JoJo reference. Masturbating to Mona Lisa is also a JoJo reference. Okay. This sounds awfully specific, and yet. So yeah, JoJo is wonderful and everybody should watch it.
Speaking of wonderful things, I've actually played Persona 4 Golden because it was ported to Steam, to PC, and it's on Steam.
Yeah.
And I was always intrigued in Persona 5 because, solely because how incredibly good it looked graphically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so incredibly stylish. And
yeah,
I just found that amazing, but it was never for PC. Now, I have played two Shin Megami Tensei games on the DS. So, and as we all know, Persona is like a spin-off from Shin Megami Tensei, or so I heard. Some people might not agree with that, I don't know. It's just, I'm not completely new to the series, but Persona 4 was something, it was something completely different.
From what I heard, that's also, it has huge JoJo influence, the Persona 4.
Like, it influenced Persona 4, it was influenced.
Persona 4 has been influenced by JoJo a lot, from what I'm hearing from people who actually know the JoJos.
Their JoJo's and the timelines? When what appeared, or something like that.
I'm not sure, just what I heard that Persona 4 has so much JoJo influence.
I mean, it probably started, I don't know, nobody's talking about Persona 1 and 2. It was like, mostly people talk about Persona 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where it all started and how it relates to one another. But, so I'm not gonna go into that.
Sure.
But I know that, so again, I'm gonna avoid spoilers. Persona 4 just has this incredible way of just being fun without any actual gameplay required. Like, the gameplay, the combat, for me, it's like mediocre for me. It's not bad.
It's fine. Eh?
It's not bad. It's not great. It's serviceable. I would much rather in the setting that it is, prefer it were like, an action combat, more similar to like Bayonetta. But, and was something that, recent Final Fantasy games did, Live action combat and stuff. I would much rather prefer that, but it's an old ass game, so
yeah, you can't have it properly.
I mean, you probably can't because
yeah, but that's a lot of work.
Whatever. We're not talking about
that.
But the parts I actually enjoyed the most about the game are the parts where it wasn't the combat. So the whole the story isn't, I wouldn't say that the story is anything special, but the characters are all like great. Mm-hmm. Everything about the characters and their interactions is just top notch. It's an amazing like slice of life game with this murder mystery involved. And that whole supernatural element really adds some flavor to the mundane elements, but the mundane elements make it so relatable. It gives it soul, and it makes it so relatable, and you like grow to just love all the characters in it.
And when you start watching JoJo, I think you will like part 4 in that case.
I like season 4.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually thought about starting with season 4.
I wouldn't recommend. I would actually recommend you to go 1, 2, 3, 4.
Some people told me that it really doesn't matter.
Kinda, but you get some characters. You get some more context for... You have two returning characters from season 3 / season 2 in season 4, so, you know, might give you a bit more insight. But you can, if you want, start watching season 4, you can.
Yeah, right now I'm actually on Persona 4 the Animation, so after that I might actually go with JoJo, because I can see the similarities with Personas.
What you were saying about Slice of Life, so season 4, aka part 4, where every other part is, give me a second, where every other part is, you know, big, grand, worldwide adventure, this is placed in a small Japanese city, over basically summer break.
Oh, okay.
It's Slice of Life, you don't have so many grand enemies, you know, huge fights, you have a lot of... episodes that are just, you know, let's go to the Italian restaurant and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a slice of life, and then you have some grander battles at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So you might actually like that part if you like, you know, the slice of lifeness and just chilling with your homies.
Yeah, that part, just chilling with my homies and developing links with them.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a really nice experience. I sunk like 87 hours into the game. I actually managed to get the true, the best ending, not without the guide, because without the guide, you're just gonna screw up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm really happy about that. And now that I actually finished the game, it's like, with the moment I finished the game, it was like, I kind of like already miss it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going on these random adventures with this investigation group. But, you know, I am not planning on playing it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it would like lessen
cheapen
the experience.
That's mark of a good game, honestly.
It's just like, it's amazing. So I would like really recommend it to anyone that's like into anything like that.
Well, now you have me intrigued. I might pick it up at one point.
I also like you said, I actually starting to get into Warframe now with new update. But the whole syndicate farming again, I'm not gonna be a fan of that. But a friend actually told me that what he did for Fortuna, he just farmed plat bought fishes and exchanged it for standing. And that's it. It's a lot faster. And a lot more enjoyable, because you're not actually grinding the Fortuna content.
Yeah, I'm just... I don't feel like farming Fortuna, I just...
But yeah, you know, farming... farming for plat is okay, and then you just buy the standing. That actually sounds completely acceptable.
They've put a bit too much grind in the game. Sometimes, it feels...
I feel that the biggest problem is that you need to do a lot of the grind to get to the good stuff.
Yes.
Like, to get the Zarya frame, I had to actually make myself grind the Fortuna content. It was not as pleasant as I would like.
Yeah.
Because I want to enjoy the open world content, and I want to enjoy the content... But, you know, it's a free game, and grind is kind of the, you know, the base of the game. It's just the part that it's actually fun to play it that makes it, like, not feel as grindy, but the game is grindy as hell.
Sometimes to grind I don't like. Like, I don't feel like fishing most of the time.
Yeah, but I feel...
you need to fish.
I see fishing as more like a... As a cool, chill activity you do. Like, I've been slaying baddies all this time. I'm just gonna go by the lake and chill and do some fishing.
But the thing is, I play Warframe 2 actually have the super hype action, bullet jumps and all that. That's what actually got me into the game.
I mean, it got everybody into the game.
And what I especially don't like is the focus on the operator.
Yeah, when they want to focus on the operator, it kind of becomes like a completely different game, but not in a good way.
My argument is this. What's the name of the game?
Warframe.
Is it Warframe or is it the operator? Because I'm playing this game to play with a cool-ass Warframe, not, you know, as some PPBS and kid.
Actually, to stay on topic and off topic... simultaneously. A game I was actually pleasantly surprised with was Sea of Thieves.
Oh yeah, that's
because
cool.
I watched a bunch, not a bunch, but I did watch some streamer play it, and it was really entertaining. And I never played it because it was on like Xbox Live and stuff like that. I was like, I really don't care about that. But when it came to Steam, another colleague on work, he wanted to play it as well. And we were like, okay, let's buy it and play it during our breaks. And we did. And we actually had a lot of fun. And the game is like, the definition of the game is to grind, but you don't grind for anything. So the game literally doesn't have any... Well, progression content, some content you'll acquire when you play enough of it, because the idea of the game is that anyone can come in and everyone is on the same level. The only thing you actually grind is to get more reputation, to get more cosmetics, because you can't get anything but cosmetics in the game. But the whole experience of just playing the game is really nice. Like the whole part of sailing around, getting some loot, taking different contracts, so you acquire the loot and you acquire gold in different ways. It's really the whole part of the game where it's so simple makes it really enjoyable for me. And for a couple of other people I know.
Plus, you're supposed to play with your friends, so that's also
a
good part of the game.
So if you have somebody to play it with, it's like a really, really enjoyable time. And what I learned from it is that this, how you operate the ship is something that I imagined will look when operating the rail jack. And they actually did spoil it at first, the Railjack, more akin of like, you have this huge ship and you have huge systems that you need like four people to actually control properly. Like somebody has to be at the helm, somebody has to be on the energy distribution, somebody has to be on weapons, and somebody has to be on like patching holds duty. And they reduced the whole Railjack experience to be able to be played like with one person. Which, you know, it's good because there's a lot of people in Warframe that play solo. But
like
also
me currently.
But also I think it was a big missed opportunity. Like having this it's still a different experience. I liked it and I would like to get into it into Railjack again. It's just that I feel like it would benefit the mode to be
actually multiplayer forced.
Multiplayer forced and a lot more like slower, more meticulous, more
tactical.
More tactical, yeah. Just so it can be like a game mode that's different from the rest of the game. Because now it feels like you're playing a better version of Arkwing.
Oh yeah, Arkwing.
And yeah, I mean it's. I have high hopes. I have high hopes that they'll get back to the mode and fix it and expand it a lot more because they probably should, because the whole point of that squad link thing is actually to force more multiplayerness in multiplayer and to actually have much grander battles and stuff like that. So looking forward to what they have planned for that.
But want to move on to actual main topic so we don't bore people with Warframe talk?
We did get some spoilers after Double Masters.
Hooray! So, want to talk about Commander Collection Green first?
Yeah.
So, this is a product that should have been out by now, but the COVID and everything. We're just seeing it first. And let's start with the two most greenest cards ever. Sol Ring and Command Tower.
Yes.
I know why they put this in this product. So you could actually sell units, you know? But these are the two of most not green cards ever.
But they do have greenish art.
I mean, you're correct, but come on, which mono-green deck plays Command Tower? Sol Ring, yeah, you play Sol Ring because it's Sol Ring.
That is the point. That is the point about the mono-green playing Command Tower. I have to admit.
But, I mean, again, it's here to just sell units. So you can, you know, buy it and have fancy Command Tower for your other decks.
I mean, all of the cards in this collection are here to sell the units.
Oh, yeah, but this is a bit extra. Because you get a special one-of-a-kind Sol Ring and Command Tower art. What are some other cards in the current spoils?
So, I'm just gonna go over all of them, so we can discuss them individually if we find them, like, interesting enough. So, we got Bane of Progress, Seedborn Muse, Omanath Locus of Mana, Freyali's Llanowar's Fury, Sylvan Library, and Worldly Tutor.
If we were making bingo for Commander Collection Green before this all got spoiled, I think Omnath would be the free spot.
Yeah.
This is the most green card ever.
Yes.
What's else notable? Seedborn Muse with the art. I think we actually did say that was going to be Seedborn Muse when we saw the art months and months ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it did seem like very Seedborn Muse-ish because of the things floating around it and it being a spirit.
Yeah. Big surprises for me were Worldly Tutor and Sylvan Library.
Yeah, because for Worldly Tutor, we were all thinking it would be either Yisan or it would be a Cord of Calling.
Yeah.
And putting Cord of Calling in would be a major feel bad because Cord of Calling is like dirt cheap now.
Yeah.
And it was reprinted recently.
Worldly Tutor, though.
Worldly Tutor, though. This is the first Worldly Tutor in foil.
Since 6th edition, right? This is the first Worldly Tutor.
And it's gonna be the first in foil.
Sweet. And Sylvan Library with the new art.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna complain about more Sylvan Libraries. Card is kinda good.
Card is kind of really... Really... The card is super green because it draws a lot of cards.
Yeah, and that's apparently what green does. I guess blue sometimes, but you know.
I mean, Sylvan Library draws card at the expense of life. That's so green.
Yeah. It's Sylvan, which means forest, so, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's so a library, it means green.
I usually go to the forests to borrow books.
Some people do go to the forests to read.
Oh, that's a different thing, but I go there to lend books.
But you know, those people don't expect to lose 4 life when they go to read in the woods.
Well, depending how hard... Maybe there is a bear just going around the woods and hitting you in the face if you read. Nerd! Like,
wow, an anti-nerd bear.
Yeah, he's a bully. He just goes around the forest and hits people.
Frailes is here. It's a very narrow commander.
Yeah, but it's a nice new art.
Mm-hmm. Bane of Progress was actually getting weirdly expensive, so good for this.
Because it hasn't been printed in a while. And the art is bitching, honestly.
Yeah.
Is it eating a space marine or something?
Well, it is feeding on a mech.
That's what I'm saying, it looks like a space marine, honestly.
Yeah, it's from Urza's Saga, apparently.
Oh, yeah, makes sense.
Because of the flavor text, yeah.
Actually, it's before the Saga.
Mm-hmm.
That's pre-Ice Age, so Antiquities.
Oh, it was when Urza was an extra deck.
What do you mean, was an extra deck? Him and Mishra are two colossal fucking assholes.
But he was more of an asshole back then than later.
Honestly, that's debatable.
No wonder Gerard cut his head off.
Because before Antiquities, he wasn't actually, you know, planning to basically do eugenics. So if I mate this person and this person, I'll get this kind of a child. Because that's what he did after, when he decided to fight for Exia. But that's why I like Urza as a character. He's, he's kind of the hero of the story, but he's an asshole.
A hero, but super flawed.
He's doing exactly what needs to be done, but nobody else is willing to do it.
He's doing the things that need to be done, but he's doing it regardless if it's good or bad. Like, because he doesn't have... He doesn't have a moral compass because he's just a god, so...
It's less of that. He knows if he actually goes with morality that the entirety of the Dominaria is doomed.
Oh.
Somebody needs to, you know, be the asshole and step up, and he decided to be that asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, he just lost sight of what humanity actually is because being a god.
Yes.
Like you said.
And that's what makes him, like, a good character.
Mm-hmm. It makes him a good character in a story.
A good character as in writing.
Yes. He's a well-written character, well fleshed out.
Yes.
Yeah, those are all the cards, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty nice collection. Mm-hmm. We don't know the price.
Yep.
So we can't really say, but if this was like... It's gonna be more I'm pretty sure it's gonna be more expensive than, like, spellbooks.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really banging collection of cards.
Yes.
Like, just Worldly Tutor and Sylvan Library, like, nice.
And then you have Sol Ring and Command Tower, you have the Seedborn Muse.
The nth reprint of the Seedborn Muse.
That's good. And then you have Bane of Progress, Frailes, and Omnath, which are a bit more fringe, but, you know. Bane of Progress is less fringe if you're playing something like Isan, though.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a legit good card to have.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the Commander Legends.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of actual spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
We can just, like, talk what we know about the set.
So, what do we know about the set?
Well, we know that there will be 20 cards per pack. When Gavin was asked what's the price, he said that we don't do MSRP, but it'll be a bit more it will be more expensive than regular set, less expensive than a master set.
Oh, he said nothing.
And since Amazon is here to help us, you can order on Amazon for $150. So he was actually correct. So the prices will be like, I'm guessing like six-ish dollars per pack.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad, yeah. And, you know, you pick two cards per pack.
Mm-hmm.
So the draft will be like that. You'll pick two cards per pack. Not like in Duel Masters where you pick just the first time.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting partners back. Which is like, it got a lot of people concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think it's a good thing because the partners right now they're like this because there's just no variety in partnerships. So,
I mean, you can either play Thrasios and Thymna, you can play Thymna Thrasios, you can play Thymna and Tana.
Yeah, and Tana is mostly there to give color.
Yes.
So, we'll see. I mean, the partners spoiled so far aren't really anything good. So, let's start with the actual partners. With Halana, Kessig Ranger, for 3 and a green. It's a 3-4 uncommon legendary creature, Human Archer, with reach.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 2. When you do, that creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature. And it has mm-hmm. partner.
And then we have Alena Kessig Trapper for 4 and a red. Legendary creature Human Scout for 3, first strike. Tap, add an amount of red equal to the greatest power among creatures you control that enter the battlefield this turn. It has partner. Isn't this that lesbian couple from Innistrad?
I guess.
I think it is.
Yeah, he did say that it's a character that was heavily requested since mm-hmm. they were, but then since their flavor texts in Innistrad.
Yeah.
So here, there you go. You get a couple of kind of mediocre commanders.
I mean, they had to make partners a bit more mediocre this time.
They're also uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And the rarity now is gonna play a big part because it's, you know, it's
draft.
It's a draft. So rarity matters now.
Mm-hmm. Plus, we expect better things when rarity goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So they still might break something.
Oh, pardon?
They still might break something with partners. Not too late.
Yeah. I mean, Alena does have it's a pretty good ability. She costs a million mana.
Plus, it's restricted to creatures that enter the battlefield this turn.
Yeah, it's more with the red impulsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think that red should give mana on impulse. It's like,
I mean, if green can draw cards whenever the hell it wants and do whatever the hell it wants, might as well give red mana.
I mean, red does have rituals, but
it does.
Rituals are like one-shot things.
It's still, you know, heavily restricted mana, so
yeah. It does help Halana with her mm-hmm. ability, which
yeah.
if you're not playing like if you're not playing a lot of mana acceleration, then the Halana's ability is kind of like really lackluster, because you're basically paying 2 more mana for your creatures to fight creatures, not fight, but you know, deal their
yeah.
B removals as well.
I mean, if you have something that gives everybody that touch, that makes it much better then.
Yeah, but it's green, so
yeah.
Well, you partner it with a black partner such as mm-hmm. Sengir, the Dark Baron.
Oh, what is Sengir?
It's a 4 and double black. 4/4 legendary creature vampire noble with flying and partner. I'm just gonna say that Gavin was hyping Sengir for 2 days before he was spoiled.
I mean, mostly because it's Baron Sengir. We wanted to have Baron Sengir in the game for such a long time.
I mean, we do, but this is the return.
But a modern version.
So, he has flying, and whenever another creature dies, put 2 plus 1 counters on Sengir the Dark Baron, so no more plus 2 counters.
Yep.
Whenever another player loses the game, you gain life equal to that player's life total as the turn began.
So this is going to be hilarious with the life cannon.
Yes.
So I'll kill you, and then I'll kill you, and then I'll use that life to kill you. There we go.
Unless a player had like one life.
Oh well. If a player had one life, you can fly and kill that guy. So you know.
Mm-hmm. It's like really weird saying that whenever a player loses the game, you gain life.
But this is commander specific.
Yeah.
It's like Blood Tyrant, was it?
Yeah.
From Alara.
Mm-hmm.
They just got bigger whenever a player lost the game.
Yeah, that Blood Tyrant wasn't really commander specific, it was multiplayer specific.
Yeah, but in those days, commander was just starting up.
But then again, it wasn't really made for. Specifically for commander. But it was just that multiplayer magic was rising.
And now multiplayer magic is commander, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But Sengir is, but he—it's cool to have him.
Yeah, he's not. He's not like. He doesn't leave a bad taste. Like, remember how Ludovic did?
Oh God. Do I have to remember?
But Sengir isn't really.
He's not heartbreaking. He's cool. He's cool.
With some sec outlets, he does do great things.
See, I'm not complaining about this card, because this card, you know, it has its niche, and it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's not breaking anything, it's not problematic, it's just, you know.
And there's gonna be an alternate art for pre-release, or whatever, something.
Whatever it is in these trying times.
Whose art was it? Was it Pete Venter's?
Mm-hmm.
Classic Pete Venter's art.
That guy kind of knows how to paint.
Mm-hmm.
Next card we have is our good old buddy Prosh Scarywriter of Kerr, but in a really special frame.
Yeah, called...
I can't
remember. Etched Foil.
Oh, yeah. So I think I have to get this one for Tess.
Mm-hmm.
Damn me, that's gonna be expensive.
We'll see how expensive the etched foils are, actually.
We'll see, but this etched foiling is cool.
Yeah, they, Gavin did show a video of it, and the card is super straight. So I hope that etched foil doesn't curl, like,
oh, hell. It came straight, they brought it straight from the printer to him.
An etched foil is like, it's a foil and it has this like texture like thing on it.
Mm-hmm. 3D almost.
Yeah, it does have a tactile. You can feel the texture. You can feel the texture just looking at it. So yeah, it looks nice, and they're gonna bring 30-ish other reprint commanders as etched foils.
Give me Alesha. Give me Alesha.
And there are going to be 40 partners in the set, and they're all going to be monocolored. And that's 1,500 possible combinations of partners.
I'm feeling sad for the people at, you know, EDH Rec.
They're... Oh no, the color combinations are gonna go all over the place.
Have fun, you guys. I think somebody at EDH Rec was like, saw the spoilers, like, I need 2 weeks of paid leave. I'm gonna use them right now.
They also promised to make white really good in the set. An actual point in their PowerPoint presentation. Good white cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they started off with Keeper of the Accord. Who is 3 and a white for a 3/4 human soldier creature. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if that player controls more creatures than you, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if that player controls more lands than you, you may search your library for a basic planes card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. I mean, it is a good white card. It brings you back, like, if your opponents are ramping, if, like, everyone is ramping, it's ramping you as well.
Yeah, but I'm more like, they could have made it just a planes card. It wouldn't have broken the card.
I mean, they still can't make white too good, come on. Also, why would it fetch non-basic? Like, Land Tax fetches basic lands. And Knight of the White Orchid fetches...
Plains cards.
Plains cards.
And what's the Nomad?
And the Nomad for one mana, he fetches...
Plains.
He fetches lands.
Yeah, see, you could have done that. You could have done that easily.
I don't know, maybe they're planning on putting some broken planes in the set,
they're not.
You know.
Come on, Niksha, they're not.
They're not, because they already showed that they're gonna do Battle Bond, that they're doing the rest of the Battle Bond cycle as lands.
Which is good,
and the only problem with it is the timing. And the whole situation when what they were spoiled in was really bad.
Why?
Because people are like still demanding fetchlands because they still said that they're going to put fetchlands somewhere else than the secret lair, and they still haven't. And the products are kind of going thin. So
turns out the commander collection green all fetchlands.
And, you know, since they spoiled the rare land cycle for Battle Bond, that means that the last set that they were supposed to be in, they're not in. So, where are they? And if they're, like, a special slot in the collector boosters for some of these sets, for Commander Legends or for Zendikar, that's not good. That's still gonna make people angry. Because
To quote Pleasant Kenobi, reprint fetchlands, you cowards.
Maybe they'll make like a Secret Lair Cowards edition.
Maybe we should invite PK on to talk Warhammer. Just randomly, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into Warhammer 40k, like not hardcore into it, but I do love the universe.
I'm super hardcore.
And I did actually consider buying like something at the store from Warhammer 40k.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see so they have a starter kit.
Yes, get started boxes.
They have another version of starter box. They have like three versions of the starter box.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a normal, they have a premium, and they have like a super giant version.
Yes.
And like I looked, so the basic starter kit has a Space Marine squad of, what was it, six or
anywho, whatever the number is.
So it had like six something plus one more thing, and it had like 10 Necrons. Mm-hmm. So if that's the new starter kit,
most likely it's like 6 to 8 Space Marines, a Sergeant versus some Necrons.
Yeah, there were 10 Necrons, one Necron something, and some Necron Scarabs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like for 300 Kuna, you get like almost 20 figures, and I was like, mm-hmm. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a super good deal.
Mm-hmm. What stopped you?
I didn't have money at the point.
Oh, okay, okay, fair enough. Okay.
I want to see the other kits. If they have, like, mechanical units, then I'm just a sucker for mechanical units. That's why I'm a Tau fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll see if... also, Necrons are pretty cool, I guess.
Honestly, yeah, they have that cool Egyptian vibe going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool.
So I'll see which of the kits to get, and then maybe I have friends that have that wanted to start painting. They did get some paints, but I mean, didn't actually start painting, so we can actually make a group painting session.
Either that or bring them to me, I'll paint them happily.
I'm looking, maybe I'll make it a new hobby.
Honestly, I
always wanted to make drawing my second hobby, but I was trying to start. They still have like two online courses I barely touched. So I plan on getting that. I actually got myself a sketch pad.
Mm-hmm.
and a new technical pen. So like I invested like €4 into this and now I'm gonna get them paid out.
I mean, I started doing terrain for role-playing games and stuff.
Making terrain actually looks super fun.
What does it look?
Making terrain seems super fun.
Because you use super cheap stuff to make things. Like, I made a basically puzzle altar for today's session. Cardboard. I just used cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
I cut it up, glued it together, then painted over it, and it looks bitching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently, while we're speaking, painting a couple of wine corks and making them into barrels.
Mm-hmm.
With just that and rubber bands.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's super nice, it's creative, it's cheap, and it's super fun.
Yeah. And I actually really like making, like, small mm-hmm. things out of mm-hmm. random stuff.
Plus, it's useful for me since I'm running a campaign, role-playing-wise, to have extra terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And soon Tess will start running a thing, and I'm hoping you join us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hoping to join you too. It's just that we have plans for our own campaign at work.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if it'll like clash or something like that. But I'm trying to make them to go to Pathfinder 2. Because they all know D&D 5. I mean, the DM knows D&D 5. Mm-hmm. Because he's been playing it. He's been he's been running it. And I've been telling him that Pathfinder 2 is... I think it's a lot more fun.
It is. If you're trying to teach people how to play role-playing games, 5th edition is the way to go. I'm not gonna lie. But if you already know how to run 5th edition, if the players already know how to play, go with 2nd in my mind. So much more customizability. For both the players and the DM.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Also, I like the whole, you know, in D&D 5, you're basically a random human.
You're a mook.
Yeah. While in Pathfinder, like, you're an actual hero,
mm-hmm.
doing a hero's journey or something like that. Like, you feel more powerful than a random schmuck.
Because you are.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You actually, if you go, like, 4 levels below you, you basically can't be touched by enemies. If you're fighting something that's like 4 levels above you, you basically can't touch that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 levels things above you are way, way, way hard to beat. That's an actual boss battle.
Okay, back to topic.
We're going all around today.
We did mention drafting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for the sole purpose of the drafting experience, they made another legend.
The best legend ever. The Prismatic Piper. For 5 mana, it's a legendary creature shapeshifter. It's a 3/3, so already failing the vanilla test. But it has the sniffed ability, partner. And if the Prismatic Piper is in your command, is your commander, choose a color before the game begins. The Prismatic Piper is the chosen color. Some people were bitching about this card. Because, oh no, it doesn't do anything. Yes, it doesn't do anything for commander.
I mean, you can be next level and play Thrasios Prismatic Piper. Just to, you know, send a message.
Yeah, guys, I'll beat you with this. Don't worry.
So, first off, every pack in Commander Legends will come with two legendaries. Guaranteed two legendary cards. Prismatic Piper is not here to take the spot of one of those. Prismatic Piper takes a common slot, and it will never take a commander slot.
Good.
Prismatic Piper will be fairly common. So, he's here just for those rare opportunities where you don't draft a commander, or if you draft a commander, but you actually don't have enough colors to actually play the game. So he's here to fix your commander problem.
Plus, what we were mentioning before the recording, this is great for commander cubes. You just get like 16 of these guys, and then when the draft is over, if somebody doesn't have, you know, legends they needed to finish up the colors they have, Prismatic Piper.
Yeah, it's a partner. So, yeah, it's this is literally the draft experience commander. And it's common,
and
so,
and
you
I like
know,
it for it. It's a really good thing for this specific draft.
And it's common, so you know, Pauper commander.
Yep. And it has bitching Seb McKinnon art.
Yeah.
Because goddamn Seb, you did it again. You wonderful son of a bitch. You know what I like about Seb McKinnon? There's no controversies about him. He's not accused of any sexual misconduct or anything.
Yeah. I mean, most of their artists aren't.
Yeah, but then you have a couple who have been causing problems recently.
Yeah. But these aren't the only spoilers we got, right?
We have two for Zendikar Rising.
Yeah.
So we have... which one do you want to read?
Well, do you want to... which one do you want to read?
I want to bitch about Nahiri, then you go with
okay.
Jace.
I'll do Jace then. So, we did get some early Zendikar Rising spoilers in the form of two Planeswalkers, which is like, wow. Planeswalker spoiled this early. Anyways, we have Jace Mirror Mage for 1 and double blue. It's a 4 loyalty legendary Planeswalker Jace with kicker 2. And when Jace enters the battlefield, if Jace was kicked, create a token that's a copy of Jace, except it's not legendary and its starting loyalty is 1.
Stupid sexy Jace.
I'm looking at the alternate art, which is not... still stupid sexy Jace. For
yeah,
plus
but this
one,
is the, do you want to know how I got this card's version?
So, for plus one, it's Scry 2. And for zero, draw a card and reveal it. Remove a number of loyalty counters equal to that card's converted mana cost from Jace, Mirror Mage.
Sarkhan the Mad, right? He did this.
Yeah. Except Sarkhan the Mad did damage to himself. So
yeah,
you
yeah.
could technically, you know, prevent that, and Sarkhan would be an infinite Bob. But
yeah,
nobody
yeah,
plays
yeah.
Sarkhan the Mad, so who cares?
I like Sarkhan the Mad. I don't play him, mind you. I like him.
Yeah, I like the aesthetics.
I like the abilities. It's just like, I'm not gonna ever do that.
I just love the color and his art and everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just not the card itself.
Plus, his name is the Mad.
Yeah. The absolute Mad Lad.
The Mad Lad. So what about this Jace?
Jace, he seems decent. He doesn't seem overwhelming.
Good.
He doesn't seem oppressive. He seems just about right. So for 3 mana, he scries too, so you can make him not kill himself with the next 0 he uses.
Yep.
Or you can just like, I play just one card that's cost 4 in my deck. Everything else is 1 to 2. And like 0. Oh, there's Bloodbraid Elf. Okay.
Oh, well.
Okay. But I mean, Bloodbraid killed Jace once again.
I'm not gonna lie. That's a weird deck if you're playing Bloodbraid and this guy together.
Yeah, I guess it is.
But, you know.
But when Jace is kicked, now that's... That's pretty good, because now you have this Jace with 1 loyalty that you're probably not gonna go 0 with him, but you'll use the plus 1 to help the other Jace not die.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically, with the two of them, you have Scry Tooth and draw a card. Scry Tooth and draw a card seems pretty good. Would you say?
Yeah, and you can always reveal lands.
Yeah.
Pro tip, you should maybe do that.
And also, if you kick a Jace Mirror Mage and then you kick another Jace Mirror Mage, now you have like
60 Mirror Mages.
You know, like literally 50 Mirror Mages on the battlefield. This Jace is perfect for that. This is getting out of hand. Now there's two of them meme.
Either that or the Spider-Man meme.
Or that.
Yeah. I'm okay with the Jace, honestly. Yeah. He's not game-breaking, but he's fun.
Yeah, I think they're over doing game-breaking three-mana walkers.
Yeah.
I hope they learned their freaking lesson.
When I said Haiura, I meant Oko.
Let's not forget Liliana.
Honestly,
Liliana, by today's standards, okay, Liliana of the Veil seems pretty fair. But let's not kid ourselves. That was the best 3-mana walker ever, and it was the best 3-mana. It was the best walker for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Was it?
It was more expensive. At points,
but that was just because they were pushing Modern hard and everybody's playing Jund.
Yeah, and because Liliana of the Veil is like bonkers powerful there.
And Jace was kinda banned in Modern.
Sure, let's go with that. Okay, anyways, Nahiri.
So remember when we mentioned Oko?
Okay.
Remember those walkers and all the horrible shit they did in Vintage? Okay, well, they didn't do anything in Vintage, but, you know. Never mind. But it's doing things in Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those powerful walkers?
Mm-hmm.
Keep on thinking about them because this one is not much to talk about. So, Nahiri, Heir of the Ancients. 2 and a Boros, so it's gonna suck immediately. Legendary Planeswalker Nahiri, 4 loyalty. +1. Create a 1/1 white core warrior creature token. You may attach an equipment you control to it. -2. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal a warrior or equipment card from among them and put it into hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library on the bottom of your library in a random order. And -3. Nahiri, Heir of the Ancients, deals damage to target creature or planeswalker equal to twice the number of equipments you control.
So it does nothing?
It does nothing. I was hoping it was going to be more like Nahir the Harbinger. Because that one is really good. And then you have this one.
Yeah.
The best part about this card is -2, get a warrior to your hand. Honestly, that's the best part.
Yeah, but it's a -2 on a 4 mana, 4 loyalty planeswalker.
I wish the -3 was something better.
Yeah, like deals damage to target creature or player.
Wanna hear something better? -3, it deals damage to all creatures equal to the number of equipments you control. There, something like that.
I mean, when I think about it, when I visualize the effect, it's kind of cool because she like wields a bunch of weapons and just slings it at everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but this is not what looks cool, this is what performs cool.
Mm-hmm. The alternate art is actually really, really great on Nahiri.
Yeah, is she going to visit Dante in Devil May Cry? Because there is hell behind her, so...
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, what I actually like more is Jace's alternate art, because in the background you see Jace doing many things.
Mm-hmm.
With mirrors. And I'm not sure what the hell is that thing that Nahiri is perched upon.
Probably Hell's Gates.
Hell's Gates? I don't know.
Yeah,
but yeah, Nahiri kind of disappointed me.
Well, she was made specifically for Standard in mind, obviously, because they're probably gonna push some warrior theme and an equipment theme. There is Colossal Hammer.
Isn't that rotating out immediately? Is this?
Yeah, so it's not for Standard, but Pioneer, where you wouldn't play either Colossal Hammer or Nahiri.
Oh, well, you know.
Even if there was like a super good warrior deck, you wouldn't play Nahiri in that deck.
If there was a super good warrior deck, you would, you know, go low to the ground and just blitz them.
Yeah. Like, if you want to play a Nahiri in Pioneer, you play the Harbinger.
Yeah.
Because it actually it cycles cards and it kills stuff.
Yes, generally if you want to play Nahiri, you play that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because that one is bitching, I can tell you.
Yeah, it is. I can confirm. Now that... Oh no.
I don't know.
Oh no. Hmm? The Pioneer bans. Oh god, we missed so many bans to talk about. But, like, let's just say that half of Magic has been banned. We're back. When you thought that Standard might be okay, well, no, we're back to banning half of Standard again.
Yeah, but it's Standard. Standard bans are a normal thing now.
And they actually banned them before rotation because now that a lot more people are online, you know, it's like when you play Magic like in physical, you just go once a week to play Standard. Yeah. And you know, once a week you have to face off Teferi. There's gonna be those couple of people that play Teferi. But when you're playing online, you're playing Teferi all day, every day.
Game after game.
So they decided, okay,
you know what?
This is a bit different than what we used to, so let's just emergency ban Teferi so he can stop. Just stop.
I mean, Teferi never did anything wrong. What do you think?
Oh, Teferi. You know, if Teferi's passive and plus one were reversed, he would...
Still be oppressive, but, you know...
Yeah, he would still be oppressive, but the part where he bounced and you couldn't do anything end of turn because of him, that was kind of like a big deal, too.
Imagine if they made it Teferi, but made it 5 mana, and instead of having a stupid passive, he would just, you know, untap 2 of your lands and draw your card and stuff like that.
Okay,
imagine
that. Yeah.
Wish we had that one.
Oh, I just remember that with Oath of Teferi, you can use Teferi Master of Time, like, four times.
Good grief. But that one hasn't broken anything yet, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's played. I actually played him in my Mono Blue Tron.
Mm-hmm. He's cool.
I'm still on the fence about him, but I like him. I mean, I did get a foil once, so I'm kind of forced to play him now.
You're kind of biased in that regard.
No, I like him. I put him instead of a Dismember.
Mm-hmm.
Because he kind of does the same. Just, you know, he delays the problem for a turn.
Yeah.
Like he always does. He just delays his problems. He never solves them.
Wow, this went surprisingly deep. And the worst part is this is kind of accurate representation of him as a character.
Man, okay. Let's leave Port of Fairy alone now. And yeah, this new Teferi doesn't... I mean, we still haven't played Standard here. I think we're going to start Standard soon-ish. And we'll see if... how good he is, because I'm playing him in one-off in Mono Blue Tron just to try him out, and so far so good. I'm okay with him, because the plus one is really good when you're playing a toolbox deck. His minus three protects me and himself, and I'm not going to talk about the ultimate, because it's not going to happen.
I mean, you don't play them for the ultimates.
No, you play him for the plus one on every turn.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Literally every turn.
Yeah. And by literally, we mean literally. Like, literally, really, literally. So, some things we know about Zendikar Rising. So, Kicker is a returning mechanic.
Yep.
Landfall is pretty... I'm pretty sure that Landfall is a returning mechanic.
Did you see that mock-up, Nissa?
Yeah.
Holy crap. So, do we just tell people the joke, or...
Sure.
So, it was a Nissa that had a landfall of whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, you create a waste basic land token, which went infinite.
Yeah.
Of course you did, because it's Nissa. Plus one, create a 1/1 green elf creature token. If you control three or more lives, destroy target non-elf creature. That's the racist Nissa from before.
Mm-hmm.
And -2, if an opponent controls a Chandra Planeswalker, sacrifice Nissa, Voice of Emeria. Search your library for a male Planeswalker card, put it on the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
Yeah, that's the new Nissa that... that friendzones Chandra. She sees Chandra and goes away.
Only thing that's missing is it saying decidedly male.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful shit post, and I was like... I was doing the card, and first thing I was like, okay, is this just breaking the Indire Red Ultimate? Okay, we just shitposting. Good.
Then I commented, I'm not gonna lie, they had me in the first part. And then somebody commented, yeah, going infinite with a landfall, that's completely realistic. And I was like, yeah.
Sounds
just,
like a Nissa, honestly, sounds like a Nissa.
Just Tron things. Honestly.
Why wouldn't you win the game with Nissa on spot? I mean, or go infinite.
I mean, Ballista is banned in Historic.
Yeah.
Oh no, Ballista is banned in Historic. Oh, F for all those Hardened Scales decks. Oh no.
I mean, everything is banned in Historic, so, you know.
I mean, Pioneer.
Whatever.
Ballista isn't banned in Historic, I think. But it is banned in Pioneer, so yeah. There go those Hardened Scales decks. Man.
Give it a couple more months and I don't think you'll be able to play in any format as Raging Goblin.
I mean, the bans for Pioneer were completely fair. The combo decks were running wild. And... Now all they have to ban now is Uro, because I don't understand how that thing is not banned.
That thing is perfectly fine.
It's still fine. It's still not banned in Standard. It's still not banned anywhere. I mean, even in Modern, it's making waves, but I don't think it's that big of a problem in Modern. But, you know, I would say that it's kind of like...
It's kind of a good card that's breaking stuff, right? Are you trying to say that?
It's not okay? I don't want that card legal in Pioneer. Because Niv to Light is like a top tier deck now. But it's no longer playing four of Siege Rhinos. It's playing four Uros. And I'm
Why wouldn't
not...
You?
And I'm not paying... For 4 Uros, because from the reprint of basically Mono Green Tron in Double Masters, you can, a friend calculated and you can actually get a whole Tron deck, Mono Green Tron, so the competitive Tron, for like 220 Euros. Which in Modern standards is budget.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's cheap.
Yeah, so you know, buy 4 Euros or have a competitive Modern deck.
Fuck Euros, man. Fuck Euros.
And by Euros you mean the creature that actually
the legendary titans.
Yeah.
What were they thinking, honestly? What were they thinking?
Like, to emulate Euro, you need what's it called? I completely forgot what's it called. That Oracle of Moldiah.
Yep.
You need an Oracle of Moldiah. You need a Tireless Tracker. And you need, like, that, anything that gives life on landfall. Like, why does he have to do everything? He doesn't have to do everything.
And he's a 6-6 on top.
Like, yeah, the downside is you have to exile 5 cards from your graveyard. That's...
Oh, no. Guess I have to cantrip my way to this.
Just, like, come on.
If Delve has taught us anything, exiling cards from your graveyard is like, eh. Sure.
I mean, I just can't wait for the rotation, so... not banning Euro was a mistake, honestly.
Don't worry, they'll print another Euro in the next set.
I mean, Euro is not rotating out, huh? Funny how things go out, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting banned, and we're getting a landfall set.
Oh, good.
And you think that Azusa is going to be a problem? Well, Azusa doesn't draw cards.
Azusa is slow compared to this.
An optimal Azusa leaves you with 1 to 2 cards in hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's like... You're not playing Magic if you're going optimal Azusa. That's a lot of lands, and a lot of lands stuck in your hand. So, I'm not scared about Azusa. I mean, we do have Azusa plus Rada, but and yet we have Ura who does that better than them. Which is actually a basis for one of my Pioneer ramp decks for my Naya ramp deck for Pioneer, which uses Yorion as its companion, because you go all the way shenanigans with everything. It's gonna be a better mono green ramp.
Ah, Euro, go fuck yourself.
Oh, and actually, we've been going on, and I did have a plan to talk about the only deck you will ever need, TM. So, my idea for a deck is to make a Pioneer/Modern/Commander deck that you can use in all of those formats without changing anything, except you put... I'm just gonna go spoil it right now. It's Yorion. You use Yorion as your companion, and you use Yorion as your commander. And right now, I'm in the process of actually selecting the cards for the deck. It's kind of hard to make it for those three formats, because there's a bunch of cards that are really useful but not allowed elsewhere, like Path to Exile. Like, Path to Exile would be really, really useful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking to make it a blinking deck, but it also has to be good enough to survive Modern. At least some Modern strategies. You still have to have a fighting chance. And I'm obeying the rules of all three formats. So you're obeying the singleton rule, you're obeying Modern ban lists, you're obeying Pioneer ban lists, Pioneer restrictions, Commander restrictions, everything. And that'll be... I mean, I'm not gonna do it for Standard, because that means that the deck is rotating. And yeah, I could have made it with Giganta, so you can, like, play anything you want, but that's boring. You just, like, play anything you want. Just play Niv to Light, then. It's a deck that's good in Pioneer and in Modern. Except it's expensive as hell now.
Oh, well.
Anyhow, but I might talk about that Yorion in the next episode. And I have to say, it's good to be back.
It is. It's fun to talk random things. Sometimes even on topic.
Yeah, sometimes being on topic is also good. Spoilers start 1st of whatever September. That month is called.
That will be September.
Yeah, September. I almost said 1st of Ruyan.
Yeah.
Which I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong. That's
I am definitely not wrong.
Or, as we usually say, the 9th month.
Yeah.
Because rarely anybody uses actual names of the months.
Yeah, even now, if I need to say a name of the month, then I have to go with, like, I have to dictate all the months back because I don't know them completely by heart. So it's the third month. So it's January, February. It's March. Yeah.
Yep. First couple months are easy, even in Croatian. But then you come to the last like 3-4 months. Is it October or November? Which comes first?
Yeah, I still have. I still don't know the exact order of like 2 months and the last 5. I get them confused. But oh well, yeah. That's just me.
That is, yeah. Well, anything else we have to say?
Not really.
We managed to do an episode. Go us, we're the best. We're doing this professionally. We are getting paid for this and everything, we're not. We are definitely not getting paid for this.
Yeah, we're paying this with our time we spend playing video games.
Or just busting our ass at work and suffering.
Yeah.
Yay, suffering.
Hooray. Okay, so.
Well, this has been episode 117 of the Old Dog and the Riddle podcast. This was your host Igor, and as always with me was my co-host Niksha. Say bye, Niksha.
Bye, you wonderful folks.
And as always, the Emperor protects.